Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with Cuban-born jazz guitarist George Garcia. We caught up with him on the road going across Georgia to talk about his new 2022 CD dedicated to you with the great and mighty Richie Cole. His passion for his instrument is immediately visible and colorfully audible through his unique original compositions, his solos, and his rhythmic guitar. He has performed across the globe with renowned and very impressive talents like Tony Bennett, Patti Page, Bucky Pizzarelli, Enrique Iglesias, and so many others. Enjoy the story.
I'm glad that we had the chance to hook up and talk, man.
That's awesome, man. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet, man. So, dedicated to you, I got to tell you, you know, unfortunately, over this last 2 years, the world of jazz has lost a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I remember when Richie left, Richie was just one of those interviews and those cats that I talked to a couple times. Man, I immediately felt like I got just sideswiped when he left us. He was one hell of a cat. So this must have been a monumental album to put together in honor of him.
Oh, man. He was definitely the inspiration in all this thing, man, to be honest with you.
Talk to me about constructing the album, like from the inception and thinking about doing it to picking the songs and to actually assembling the cats to put this together. Kind of talk to me about this album.
The first two songs were recorded back in 2009. That's Minority. This one's for Richie. Richie was down in South Florida. You know, he always called me when he had something. But he was down in South Florida. If he was able to use me, he would definitely. He had a performance on a Friday, and he was staying at my house that night. And we got to talking, and I said, Richie, you know, how about if we go to the studio? He goes, let's do it. Set it up. Let's go. So, you know, we had a couple of drinks. He really wasn't, you know, he liked to drink, but he wasn't drinking that much, you know. So we had a couple of drinks that out back. I made a few phone calls. I got the studio. I talked to the guys, Rick Dahl, which he's on that recording. I had a few different bass players, actually. Two different bass players. Rick Dahl and Gabby Viva. But Rick Dahl is the one that did that particular, those two tracks. James Kaufman, a very dear friend of mine. And we went in the studio the next day, like at 11 o'clock in the morning. And that was it. I said, hey, you know, what do you want to play? What do you want to start with? And he called that tune, Minority. He goes, let's do this. He kicked it off, man. And it was like 300 beats per minute, you know, going 100 miles an hour. That was really that kicked it off. That got my adrenaline going. As a matter of fact, I ended up going to the hospital on Monday because after our concert on Friday night, my arm was, like, I couldn't pick it up. And I went to the doctor, and he says, George, you gotta be admitted to the hospital. You're having a problem. And I said, no, man, I have a recording I have to do. I need to do this recording. And I went, did the recording, and I had another show on Saturday. Sunday, I didn't feel good, and on Monday, I was admitted to the hospital, and on Wednesday I had a stent put on. That was the whole thing, but had I gone to the hospital Friday, I would have never had this recording done.
Yeah, man, if you would have given...
That's how close that was.
Yeah. If you would have given me a couple of guesses to figure how you would have concocted an album with Richie, I think I may have been able to say, you guys had a couple drinks, and he said, let's do it. That just makes... That's the Richie way.
Yeah, no, that's exactly the way it was. We were just, I met Richie back in 2000 and I would say 99. I walked into he called me, I was subbing for a guitarist is what it was. I walked in, we did a quick rehearsal, and then we did the show, and then he looked at me, he goes, you're my man, just like that. And he called me for everything. then after that, I went to his house. He had a boat in Key Largo. He stayed there. And we had a gig in Isla Mirada. And I drove all the way out there, met with him and his wife at the time, that he loved dearly. Risa was her name. We just connected. It was a beautiful thing. And, you know, he liked to drink at times a little bit too much, and I heard a lot of things from a lot of people, but I never encountered that until one time that he was doing a thing, and I wasn't on the gig. It was a house band, and he was, you know, he said, come on by and play. And I went over, I sat in, and he was a little tipsy, and he just let me play the rest of the night. And I think the owner got pissed off or something, but he didn't give a crap. He was like, hey, you know, I can do whatever I want to do, and that was fine. You know, but that was really the only time. But other than that, man, I had a great time with him, and his stories are, like, unbelievable, man. I mean, beautiful stories. Another time we were hanging out at my brother's house, and he told me a story about Cuba when he went and played at the Cuban Jazz Fest, Havana Jazz Fest. And he said, you know, I did the show, and in the front row was the Comandante, Fidel Castro, which I don't love, but he was there. He said, after the show, I was in my room, and he said, I get a knock at the door, and these two big guys showed up and said, Comandante wants to meet you. You know, he's very, like, chill. He goes, yeah. So they took him, and all Fidel wanted to do was meet him. And gave him
wow.
A cigar and all that. I mean, he's got a lot. He had a lot of stories, a lot of good stuff, a lot of sad things. He talked about Eddie Jefferson in that time frame when he got killed and everything. And, you know, we had a great run, you know, as friends and as musicians.
Well, you know, and I guess the one thing about doing this album now with COVID and all of that, it's been quite a time. We're hitting that 2-year mark. As a musician, the musician community has just been devastated, pummeled because of no live shows. How have you survived? How have you been through this COVID era as a jazz musician?
Let me put it this way. I left Cuba when I was 8 years old. My parents coming to a country without knowing the language or anything or having nothing, they managed. And I always looked at that as an inspiration to whatever it is, you land on your feet and keep going. You don't stop. You don't sit there and pout about life, about this or that. So when all this stuff happened, I was driving back home because all my gigs got canceled on March 13th. I was driving back home on the 15th. And that's what I said, well, what now? What do I do? Is this the way it's going to be? We're done? Or, you know, that's the first thing that crossed my mind. And as I'm driving, I had this long drive, and I said, well, you know, my parents did it with nothing. I'm already way ahead of them. I'll figure it out. When I got back to South Carolina, where I live, I started working at refurbishing a house. And I am, you know, pretty handy. And I'll figure shit out no matter what. I'll sit there, I'll pray and figure it out. And say, you teach me, and he does, and bam. And that's all I managed. I got through that. I didn't pick up my guitar for about 3 months. Because I was just like, okay, I'm done with that for right now. Until I got a call to do a recording. And then I had to sit there and practice the woodshed for about a week before I recorded. And went from there. So that was at that time. Things started picking up, getting a few gigs here and there. Nothing to write home about, but then this past year, I've been very, very busy. I cannot complain. I mean, it's been a blessing. I've been very, very busy, and I see it into the summer. I hope and pray that this whole thing is just, you know, we're going to look back at it, and we've learned a lot from it. you know, and I'm fortunate there are people that didn't make it, and but we're here, you know, to carry on.
Yeah, and I've thought about that, too. I was talking to a musician from Iran, and I was asking about COVID. He was like, you know, we came from a war-torn area. We've been used to strife. This has been a part of what we've done. And I find that interesting when you think about different regions of the world and what people have gone through. And when they have something like this presented, there's an inherent survival mechanism that's already in their DNA.
That's what we have to hope. You know, that's our... Well, the driving force behind us, that we have that, you know, and I was fortunate enough to be a part of a family that, they made it, you know, Cuba with the communism and everything, and coming here and, you know, we got to work, we got to do this, we got to move on, we got to survive, and, you know, survivorship, but, you know, not one to... You know, dig a hole and stick your head in there, but just go. We're going to plow through it, you know. So, it's a great thing.
Amen. Yeah. So, yeah. Talk to me a little bit about how this music jazz journey began for you. You know, kind of your childhood and influences and how you kind of got to the point where you're at today.
Music has always been a part of my life back in Cuba. We were not allowed to listen to American music. That was forbidden. If they catch you, you know, you would be reprimanded and maybe even thrown in jail. That's the way it was with musicians in Cuba. But I was a kid, and what we did, my cousins and my brother, they're 4 years older than me, at night, the sound waves from Miami would carry to Cuba, and that's when we tune in and listen to American music, whether it be jazz or rock or whatever. At the time, the Beatles were very popular, so we listened to all of that, you know, Beatles and you know, Procol Harum and so on and so forth. So that's my introduction to music. And obviously in Cuba, we had a lot of music, a lot of rhythms, especially in the area that I grew up and I was born. There's a lot of African rhythms that were, you know, that the Africans came there and they were, that's where we get all our Latin jazz and that's where we get it from. So coming to the States in 1968, I always wanted to learn how to play guitar, and that didn't happen until we were very poor. You know, maybe my dad couldn't afford buying a guitar, or even getting left. But we moved to Atlanta, Georgia, and this middle school that I attended, they offered a guitar class, and that's why I signed up for that. And that's where I started, you know, learning how to play simple, you know, chords and folk music and that sort of stuff. And it wasn't until a little bit later on that my brother introduced me to jazz. He brought in Reason, the album Reason by George Benson. He brought in Aldi Meola. Return to Forever, that was another one. So then I started listening to Breezin and all that, and the guitar, of course, George Benson. I was like, how does this guy do this? I couldn't figure it out. And that's when I realized I needed to go study. And we moved back to Fort Lauderdale, and that's where I met my teacher, Vince Breedice. By the way, Vince Breedice taught Joe DiOrio. Joe DiOrio just passed away just recently. And Joe DiOrio was an incredible virtuoso guitarist. And that's where Vince introduced me to Charlie Parker, jazz, Joe DiOrio, and that's all I listened to. I wouldn't listen to anything else but, you know, Charlie Parker. I had to get that. Joe Pass, Wes Montgomery, That was it. I go to sleep listening to that. I felt like I was way behind and that I needed to catch up, and that's all I listened to. Then I got into classical music, and that's all I listened to. I wouldn't even listen to the radio. I just listened to all these recordings. I didn't listen to pop music. I didn't listen to rock. It was just bebop, straight ahead. That was it. And that was the beginning of really getting my jazz, the vocabulary. I always felt like I needed to learn how to play bebop in order to play whatever I wanted to play. So I really just worked on those lines with Charlie Parker, John Coltrane, all those cats. And everything, it wasn't just guitar players. Obviously, I'm mentioning saxophone players, but, Clifford Brown, Miles Davis, Dizzy Gillespie, Vic Kelly, piano, Herbie Hancock, all those cats. It didn't matter what I listened to. I was focusing on the notes and how they approach soloing and playing over tunes.
Let me ask you this. What was the first live jazz show you saw when you got to America that just totally blew you away?
Yeah, that's a good one. There was a club in Fort Lauderdale called Bubba's. And Bubba's had Ira Sullivan as the house band there. And I think Joe also played there, but it was really, when I saw Ira, it was just him, Teddy Higgins on piano, Lou Berryman on bass, and Steve Bagby drums, or Guy Bibber, one of those cats, And my brother took me there. I went to see this, Ira Sullivan. And I was like, wow, that was just amazing. So I knew this club was there. And as I got into a little bit older, I was very young, I was like 18 years old, I'd go there and just listen to whoever. There was a cover charge. The maitre d' would find a table for me. I'd sit down. I caught Dexter Gordon a night that I didn't even know Dexter Gordon was Dexter Gordon. I was just blown away by this big, tall man with a low voice, and the way that he played and what he played and the whole rhythm section. As a matter of fact, I had a date. I brought the date with me, and I didn't have enough money to pay for the whole thing, and she didn't have any money. So the maitre d' said, that's okay. I came back the following day just because I wanted to see Dexter Gordon. I wanted to pay my bill. And I did. I sat down again and watched the whole show again. And that's when I realized who I was listening to. This guy, Dexter Gordon. Later on, I found albums of Dexter Gordon, and I was like, wow, that was amazing. But that it was Ira Sullivan, the very first jazz show that I saw. That it was Dexter Gordon, and from there I was able to see Joe Pass there, Barney Kessel, and Herb Ellis, numerous guys that came across there.
That's amazing, man. It's interesting. I look back on this beginning to this pandemic. On March 12th, 2020, I had Maxine Gordon sign the biography about Dexter's life. And it was the last thing that I did before we went into lockdown. And it was a wonderful speech about the book. But I remember when she signed that, I got back with her about a year later and I said, I will never forget that autograph. When I walked out, I thought, what am I going to do with this? How am I going to present this? And it's the most important autograph I've ever gotten in my life, because it's just March 12th. Yeah, so, but anyways, it's, yeah, Dexter was amazing. That would have been amazing to see.
What a memory, man, right? to kick off what was going to happen in the following day, or 3 days after,
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, the other part of us being kind of having this downtime is and being reflective is just kind of looking into our lives. And my question to you is, what do you like the best about being a professional musician? What motivates you every day to create music?
Well, you said it. It's create. The beauty of you know, what we have, and I say everybody because I believe everybody is creative. You just have to find it, you know, and it's to be able to create. When you create, you're free. You're expressing what you feel, what you hear, you know, your soul, your spirit, everything, you know, your life. It's, you know, when I'm playing, I mean, there are certain gigs I do that are not creative at all, that I have to play exactly what they want. That's why I hate playing shows. As a matter of fact, I have a show coming up that I have to read it, and I was just talking to one of the guys and said, you know, I'm doing this for the money, but man, you know, there's no creativity in this thing. It's just like you're just doing what they're asking you to do, and you have to play it. And I'm a professional. I want to make sure that I do a great job. But to create music is it's amazing. I mean, wow. What can I say? That's really the reason. That's really the reason why I keep going and recording these albums and there's more. I have a lot more. You know, I tell my wife, I say, you know what? When it's time for me to check out, it means that I can't play anymore, okay? But until then, I will continue to record and continue to write and putting things out, you know? The creativity is the driving force behind that.
Everyone has a perception of you, an idea of who they think you are, your family, your friends, your fans. But ultimately, you live your life. You have a perception of yourself. Who do you think you are?
I feel like I'm a hard worker. Like, I don't take no for an answer on something that I really believe in, something that I really, you know, that I want to put out there, that I think that, you know, that I want to share with the world, whether they like it or not, and, you know, so it's perseverance. In a nutshell, I stick with the program, I'm focused, and it's perseverance that takes me there. So that, in a nutshell, that's really my main goal as a person. That, you know, I love my family, my wife, my kids, my grandkids. I'm a family man. That, to me, comes first. I don't want to say music comes first because my family is everything. But music is part of me. So I think, you know, God has given me that and allowed me to do music and have the family, as opposed to a lot of great musicians, they lose their family because of it, you know. But I would say I've been able to do and balance both, you know. And it hasn't been easy. But like I said, it's perseverance. I keep at it. And, you know, no, it's not in my vocabulary.
Yeah, well, you're preaching to the choir. I'm a Libra, so I understand that balance for sure.
Well, that's wonderful. Congratulations. That's a beautiful thing.
Without a doubt. George, hey, man, this has been wonderful. I'm so glad Kevin got us in touch. That I gotta help you across the landscape of Georgia a little bit. Thanks for opening up. Good luck with the album. God bless Richie Cole, and, you know, good luck.
Thank you very much. Beautiful, man. Big hug to you, man. Be cool.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest cats in Cuba, Miami, Georgia, Kansas City, and spots all over the world, giving fans all that jazz. And thanks to George for his time, music, and honesty. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino in the iTunes Store. Visit NeonJazz at YouTube.com, and for everything Neon Jazz all the time, go to theneonjazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Let's fly over the rainbow, why then, oh why can't I?
Neon Jazz.